Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for our Friday show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. Lane County Senior Public Health Officer Dr. Patrick Ludke is with us again to help make sense of vaccine distribution and other COVID-19 questions. Thanks for being here.
Always nice to be here today. I just feel great being here. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you. Before we get to listener questions, let's catch up on a few things. How are we doing in terms of case numbers here in Lane County?
Oh, yeah, happy to do so. And you're lucky because I actually brought the numbers this time. So as of today, we have 8,663 cases, and those are confirmed cases and presumptive cases. And that puts us still right on track with about 1,000 new cases every 13 days. We're still tracking in that really high number of cases that we have been tracking on since late November. And that's not where we want to be, but that's really what we've been expecting and we've been planning for. So that's disheartening, and we think we're going to be in that space for, several more weeks, and we all need to continue to practice good infection control.
And in terms of how those numbers are affecting hospitals and healthcare, are we doing okay for hospital capacity?
We are, and actually that's a real bright spot. You know, we obviously have all seen some of the nasty experiences that happened early on when we knew less about this virus and didn't know as well how to take care of it. So Seattle was first, then New York City, of course, Northern Italy, parts of Louisiana, and now Southern California, really getting hit hard, and their hospitals are, in some instances, full, and some are on what we call divert, when they just can't take any more patients, they have to go somewhere else, and that's not a position we want to be in. We've never reached that here with the five hospitals in Lane County. We were a little pressed, and again, I don't want to speak too much for our colleagues at McKenzie and Peace Health. There were a few weeks, especially in late November and first part of December, where we were stretched and they were stretched, but never overwhelmed. And I think that's because of the good work of people listening to today and doing their appropriate infection control.
Well, we have a new administration in the White House, and Dr. Anthony Fauci has been freed up to speak to the public in these press conferences once again, and Fauci has told us the administration wants to be transparent and honest with the public to build back trust. What do you think about how the new administration might affect Lane County and Oregon's ability to better cope with the pandemic?
Oh, that's a tough one. So we want to be transparent and honest on this radio show, and public health here in Lane County wants to be exactly the same, and I hope we have been so. We receive our share of emails and Facebook posts, et cetera, and we listen to all those. I always bring a pen to this radio show, and I take notes with what I'm hearing. And I think that having an administration, whether it's Republican or Democrat or independent, whatever it might be, that listens to the science is really helpful. And we don't know all the science. This is a new virus, but we do know some things. And, you know, I think some listeners know in a former life I was a Navy doc. That was my first career as a physician. And part of the training when you go to sea on a ship, you're a little floating long-term care facility. You know, not like a nursing home, but similar in some ways. And we had all sorts of training on the data from disease outbreaks in these congregate settings and even how to put people in their bunk beds when they're staying on the ship. You don't put them head-to-head. You don't want their breathing spaces to overlap. You spread a lot more respiratory disease. We have studies on this data, you know, that's 70, 80, 90 years old from the Army and Army barracks and Navy ships. And unfortunately, sometimes that data is just neglected, and it's nice to hear that that data that's robust and has been around for a long time will actually be used.
Well, today Governor Kate Brown restated her priority of getting teachers and other school employees vaccinated ahead of seniors in order to accelerate reopening schools. But there is concern regarding the fact that the seniors are more vulnerable to major illness or death. Where do you think, you know, what do you think about this concern and the state's priorities for vaccination? I don't know how much you can speak about this, but...
Boy, another hard question, Rachel.
Sorry.
So, in the first couple of minutes of the show. So I really do think it's a balance, and anytime you're talking about a situation where you have far more demand than supply and you have a really important product that's in limited supply, you have to be careful. And I think that the conversations on prioritizing the use of this limited product have been really good. It's not just saying let's only focus on, let's say, health risk. Well, it would be great if everybody who was at the highest risk was protected, but that wouldn't be overly helpful if we had no police on the streets, or we had, think about the fire season just a few months ago, if we had nobody to fight fires, if we had nobody to put food in the grocery stores. So you have to balance all of those other societal needs, and that is really hard to do. I'm not going to say what the CDC or the state health department has done is perfect, but I've been heartened that those really tough conversations have taken place. Who's at highest risk? Who is critical in response to the COVID pandemic? Who are the essential workers that need to keep society going? And that's partly why I think the governor has come out and said, we're going to reserve some doses, not very many actually, but some doses for educators in the K-12 space, because kids do need to get back to learn, and especially the younger ones, where it's kind of equal parts socialization and learning those social skills and the academic skills. So it's hard. It's really hard to do. I'm glad it's not my job, but I'm heartened by those conversations that have been had.
So we are having another mass vaccination event here in Lane County this weekend. Can you tell us who can get vaccinated in this particular weekend's event, and how will they know that they can?
So I am happy to do so. Despite those first two hard questions, I'm still really happy, Rachel. So we have 4 days of vaccination clinics coming up, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I'm happy to confirm the National Guard is coming down to help us as well. We're going to be vaccinating thousands of people over those 4 days, and we're going to hopefully get a large percentage of groups 2 and 3 done. So I know longtime listeners have followed, you know, who is in group 2, who is in group 3, and we're going to get those persons in the residential homes, the group settings, behavioral health, et cetera, vaccinated. So these are invitation mass vaccination clinics, and then that small amount of doses designated for educators. I don't know exactly how many we have, but it's only a few hundred. I should know that number by the end of the day, but it won't be very many. So that's what it's going to be, and those people have already been invited, and we're already looking at the excess, too. So occasionally, like our mass vax clinics last weekend, we invited the Sunday clinic. We had 1,000 people we invited, and I think we had 4% not show up. So we wanted to make sure we had an extra 4% waiting so we didn't waste any doses. So everybody's been invited so far. All the plates are filled up. Let's hope everybody can show, and we get as many needles in arms as possible.
So the idea is that all the vaccines are spoken for in terms of making sure that nothing gets wasted.
For these 4 days, correct. Yes, indeed.
Okay. Well, let's hear from, this is a voicemail we got from Tracy that has to do with having those additional health issues that she's wondering about. Here we go.
Hi, my name is Tracy. I'm calling from Eugene, Oregon. I'm 63 years old. I have a history of Hodgkin's lymphoma, recovered but damaged somewhat. I have cardiac disease and symptoms, and I have hypertension, and I'm wondering whether this would put me in a category that would let me get my vaccination sooner perhaps than others might.
Well, Tracy, thank you for the question. It doesn't sound like she's in a long-term care facility. It sounds like she's living at home. I didn't catch her age, so the governor has moved ahead. When we move into phase 1B, which will be coming here real soon, the governor has moved ahead with age-based categories. So group 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 will be the 5 groups under the next phase, and we will start some of them next week. And the health-related conditions will not be part of those. It will be age-related, because age is the highest risk that we're aware of, with some of the health conditions added to it. So if she is over 80, if she's 80 or older, she'll be in group 2 of 1B. If she's 75 and older, she'll be in group 3. If she's 70 and older, she'll be in group 4. You get the idea. And then 65 and older will be in group 5. So that's what's coming. We don't have specific dates for those yet because, again, it's dependent upon how much vaccine we receive, but it is coming.
Okay. Here is a question regarding being contagious. This is another voicemail we've got.
Yes, this is Karen from Eugene. My son and his wife were tested positive for COVID and were told to quarantine for 10 to 14 days. My son then took another test and tested negative so he could go back to work. The doctor over the phone told my daughter-in-law that after 14 days she was no longer contagious, even though she has lingering symptoms and isn't feeling well. Is this true? Are you only contagious for a certain number of days, or if you still have symptoms, are you still contagious?
So, a nuanced response. In general, the vast majority of us, we will no longer be symptomatic, no longer be communicable after that 14-day period. And it's interesting that over time we've learned that some people can shed the virus longer than expected. And those people most typically are people who have an immune compromise problem. So maybe they have cancer. Maybe they're on chemotherapy. Maybe they are taking some medication that prevents them from rejecting a kidney that they had donated to them. And that medication prevents kidney rejection, but it also prevents you from fighting infection well. But most of us, we actually are not infectious after 9 or 10 days in the vast majority of us. So she, the daughter, is probably not infectious. If she has one of those conditions that puts her at risk of shedding longer, she should talk with her doctor, her nurse practitioner, and assess the best way forward with regard to continuing to be protective and wearing masks and social distancing.
So here's a question about how the vaccines work. This is from Jackie, and we got this from email. And she asks, she says, I understand the new COVID vaccine injects mRNA into the body to instruct the body's cells to produce a viral spike protein, which will trigger an immune response. Which type of the body's cells are receiving the mRNA and producing the protein? And then how long will those cells continue to produce the protein? And how long will the mRNA be present in those cells?
Wow. So she's pretty up on the science. So we inject the vaccine typically into the arm muscle, and those cells around there will be producing it. There are some fat cells in there, and it's mostly muscle cells, and then there's some other structural cells, some fascial cells, etc. And messenger RNA has a very short half-life, meaning it doesn't stay around very long. So by way of example, we are sloughing off skin cells every day. I'm sure people have seen people with dandruff, or they have cleaned their pillows and there's little pieces of skin cells along their bed. It's kind of a gross thing, but that we slough those off, and we make new skin cells every day. But we don't continue once we started making that process to make more and more and more messenger RNA, and it stays around forever. It decays in a short period of time, in hours mostly. It's the same with other rapidly growing tissues like the lining of our intestinal cells. We slough that off and make new every day, but if we kept making it infinitely, we'd have tumors inside of our intestines. So typically, these vaccines, as far as we know, you will make protein from it for maybe up to 10 to 14 days, but the messenger RNA itself decays pretty quickly as it is read in the cell factory, the protein factory inside of the cells. And we believe, and we don't have any data to say otherwise, that there are no instances in the millions of people who've received this where that process has gone awry, which is a great thing. And even though we've only had this vaccine being used, well, some of these vaccines, the Moderna vaccine, first people were injected in February, 10, 11 months, mRNA vaccines have been researched for over a decade. So there's further data than just COVID in this space.
You're listening to The Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald with Lane County's Dr. Patrick Ludke, and we're taking your questions about COVID-19 and the vaccine. And here's a question that we got via email. This is from Marianne, who says, I have a 17-year-old who wants to have sleepovers. Do you think it's safe? What limits should I set? For example, one friend a week, and should they sleep with masks?
Oh, gosh. So less is more, so the smaller the size, number one. Number two, I wonder if some of these people are part of a cohort where they're only interacting with each other and no one else. I'm aware of some people who have been doing that for some time, especially in families where there's a real brittle person, a real frail person who's at high risk. But in general, now is probably not the time for sleepovers, even, just one or two people. Visits outside, maybe having these types of athletic events are something they can do outside to play and run around and go to the park and that sort of thing. Those are safest. They're not perfectly safe, of course. But sleeping over, kids are kids. Gosh, I had lots of sleepovers when I was young, and my three kids have had lots of sleepovers. And, you know, you're not up all night making sure that they're behaving. And I would suggest we should wait some time before we begin that activity.
Okay. This is somewhat along the same lines. Another email question. This is from Natalie saying, I understand we still need to be careful with masking, sanitation, and social distancing, even after vaccines have been administered. However, I wonder if it's okay not to do these things when we spend time with friends and family if everyone present has been vaccinated and we are in a private space.
Oh, boy. So the current knowledge is if you are 14 days or more after receiving the full spectrum of vaccine you're supposed to receive, and right now there's only two vaccines and they're both two doses, so if you're 14 days after the second dose, the general sense is 95% of you are protected from having COVID disease. It's not 100%, so that's the first thing to keep in mind. If any of those people are still, you know, they're really at risk, they have immunocompromised, or they're 85 years old, they're still at risk. They still have a possibility, 5 out of 100, you know, 5% risk. And then secondarily, I think it's important that if they become symptomatic, don't just rule out COVID, because it still could be COVID. It probably isn't, because, again, these vaccines have shown to be pretty darn good, but they're not 100% good. Did I answer all that, Rachel?
I think so, and it sounds like, you know, that time is still a little ways off because we're still in the early stages of vaccine distribution.
Yeah, it is indeed. You know, we have certainly some healthcare workers and some people in long-term care facilities that have received both doses, and they are 14 days out. So there are some of those people who are significantly protected. But in a county with 40,000 persons in the health space in this 1A priority group, we're only about halfway through. We're only at 20,000 so far with just that group. And that doesn't include, you know, the other groups that we're talking about, non-healthcare workers, et cetera. So we have a ways to go.
Well, here's a question, another email question. This is from Craig, who asks, if our family has recently recovered from COVID this year but have not received the vaccine, is it advisable to travel via airplane?
So airplane travel, the travel itself is pretty safe, just on the airplane. But it's the getting there, it's the waiting in line, it's picking up your baggage, you know, all those areas where you bump into other people who are at risk. But because of the way that air flows on airplanes themselves, the risk on the plane itself is very low. In fact, I'm sure listeners have heard of an occasional tuberculosis case or a measles case on a plane, but they're really, really uncommon. So if they are confirmed COVID cases, so they had a test, they didn't just say, well, I had a brother or sister, mom or dad who had COVID and I got the same symptoms. Well, it might not have been COVID. It might have been a cold virus. It might have been the flu. If they are test-confirmed COVID cases and they are fully recovered and not symptomatic, so they're 10 days or more past their symptoms and they have no symptoms, they probably do have some immunity. And they could travel with some safety, but they should still wear a mask. They're probably not 100% immune. And I would still be careful with traveling.
Okay. Now, a voicemail from Edward, who wants to hear daily vaccination numbers and to know when we'll get herd immunity. And here is Edward.
Hi, it's Edward from Vanita. And I had a question about if we could start hearing the metrics for people getting the actual vaccines. We hear each day how many people have got tested positive and how many people have died. Can we start hearing how many people have been vaccinated and when, you know, we get closer to herd immunity?
Well, Edward, thank you for that, and I am taking notes as always, and I think that's a really good idea. And I am going to try to take that on for Lane County. I will tell you a little bit of the challenge, of course, is, as you know, if you've listened to the show for a while, vaccine goes independently to the hospitals, doesn't come through the local health department. Vaccine goes independently to the long-term care facilities from those contracted pharmacies, doesn't come through the health department. So we have to pull all those strings together to get all those pieces, and we do that, but it's not in real time. So I really like that idea. We know we're in the 20,000 vaccinated range because of the relationships we've built with those groups, But I think it's a good idea to try to share, if not every day, at least every week, that, hey, we're at this level and this is how far we have to go. So thanks for that question, Edward.
And remind us, you know, where, how will we know when we're at herd immunity?
Well, current thinking is somewhere in the 70 to 80% range is what we need to prevent these giant wildfire type of outbreaks. And so we only have vaccines now that are approved for persons 16 and older, so we don't have vaccines for kids. And we have somewhere about 320,000 adults in Lane County. So when we hit around that 70% range, we will achieve certainly some sort of herd immunity, and we'll have isolated outbreaks instead of outbreaks everywhere like we have now. Gosh, we have 50 outbreaks we're tracking today, and they go from Florence to Oak Ridge to South Lane. They're everywhere. So I promised you I'd make these answers short so we could get as many questions as possible, but I'm going to say a little bit more. Right now, we're kind of looking at late April for a time where we're going to start seeing significant decrease in cases because we are on that trajectory of 1,000 infected persons every 13 days, and those people are getting immunity. Unfortunately, some of them are getting really sick, and their lives are being altered, but we still count that as immunity, and then we're going to be increasing our vaccination. So by tax time or the second half of April, we may very well have 100 to 120,000 people in Lane County who are immune. Now, that's a best-case scenario. Let's hope we get all the vaccine to make that happen. And but by the time we reach that, we're going to have a significant amount of immunity. It won't be enough for herd immunity, but an amount of immunity that will help caseloads to drop. So we can get through to that safely. Boy, I will be even happier than I am today.
That sounds like something to be optimistic about.
Indeed.
Just one more question, actually. And we had a couple people who wanted to know how to help with vaccine administration. These are, I think they're retired nurses, and they just want to know, should they contact public health, or are you needing volunteers to help with these events?
We absolutely do. And please go to the Lane County Public Health website, and you will see this big yellow band that goes across the screen, and it says coronavirus inside that band. Click on it, and then you'll see some boxes to choose, and one of them has the word vaccines in it. Just click on that. And there are forms for you to volunteer, whether you're an individual or you're a practice, like a clinic. And we really do need people. So we need to vaccinate those 320,000 or so adults I told you, and the entire Lane County Public Health Department's only about 80 people, so that, you know, we can't do it alone. We need help, so please do volunteer.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Dr. Ludke.
You're most welcome.
Patrick Ludke is Lane County Senior Public Health Officer. Thanks for joining us for KLCC's Friday show. We had production help from Angela Kellner. I'm Rachel McDonald. Enjoy your weekend.